This should not be this hard. Oh my goodness. Just stop talking.
What's up, guys? Welcome to this week's episode of the No Gimmicks Podcast. I'm Brady Leonard.
I'm Josiah Hughes. Hey, you stop saying from Southbound Fearing. What's that all about?
They know my band's name.
Okay.
I mean, they know our names too, but I feel like you have to say your actual name at the beginning of a podcast.
I guess that's probably the rule.
I feel like even Joe Rogan does that and everybody knows his name.
No, he doesn't say his name at the beginning.
He doesn't?
All right, now we're just rambling.
Okay. This week we had an absolutely great guest. We have Yasmin Mohammed, author of Confessions of an Ex-Muslim, co-host of the Secular Jihadist from the Middle East podcast. She was absolutely fantastic, very generous with her time. I'm sure you guys are very excited if you've heard her on other shows or listened to her podcast and know her story. If you don't know anything about her, then buckle up, because her story is incredible and very informative. It was a great interview. Yeah, we were stoked to have her on.
Get the popcorn going, y'all.
Get your popcorn ready. Anyway, without further ado, here is our interview with Yasmin Mohammed. Okay, guys, we're here with Yasmin Mohammed. Yasmin, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, you guys. I'm looking forward to this.
Absolutely. We've been trying to get you on the show for a while. A hurricane kind of interrupted those plans, and we're very grateful that you're finally with us. Yeah. For you guys listening who aren't familiar with Yasmin and what she's working on and her story, buckle up. It's about to get real. And we'll get to your book that you're writing, and we'll get to a lot of stuff, you know our culture right now in regards of Islam and radical Islam. But you have to take us back to the beginning, Yasmin, with your story, how you grew up and how you came to where you are right now. I mean, it's a fascinating story for those listeners who aren't familiar. Kind of want to take us from the top. I mean, I feel like we'd need to keep you here for 6 hours to tell the whole story, but in an abridged version, kind of start us from the beginning.
Okay. So born and raised in Canada to a very conservative family. My mom was actually second wife to an Egyptian man. She's originally from Egypt as well. But usually when you say second wife, people think like second wife, but no, it's concurrent, because in Islam you can have up to four wives. Ah. So my mom was his second, two out of four.
Wow.
Yeah. And that happened when I was about 5 or 6 years old. So that's when my life really changed.
Hmm.
And then at about the age of 9, I was, a hijab was put on me, and went to Islamic schools after that.
This is still in Canada?
Yeah, all of this is in Canada, yeah. And then when I was about 19 years old, because now I've graduated from high school, so of course it's time to get married now. And so I was forced into a marriage with a man from Egypt who I didn't really know that well. I mean, hardly at all. And he didn't even speak English. And then married him, had a baby with him, and then was contacted by CSIS, who are the Canadian CIA, to let me know that he was a member of Al-Qaeda, which, wow, this is pre-9/11, so I had no idea what Al-Qaeda were, who Osama bin Laden was, or anything like that. This is late 90s.
Yeah.
So he was there as part of the whole 9/11 effort, and I didn't realize that till afterwards. But by the time 9/11 happened, I was separated from him already.
So you believe, yeah, that he had a part in planning it? Is that what you're saying, or part of the strategy?
Well, I had no idea at the time. Now I can Google him and read about, because he was imprisoned in Egypt. 15 years hard labor was his sentence. So that whole court case and everything is all, like, the information is, now I know what he was up to. Now I know what was happening. But at the time I had no clue. So yeah, I got away from him and got away from my mom and took my daughter and started going to university. And when I was in university, I took a history of religions course. And that's when I discovered that this religion that I had been following all these years was everything I'd been told was a complete lie. Basically, this book did not come from some deity that sent it with his angel to some guy in a cave. Turns out that was all bullshit. These stories were all plagiarized basically from Christianity, from Judaism, and from pagan religions before that even. So
yeah.
So it was all a farce, and I was very happy to discover that. But of course it took a lot of time to clean the brainwashing out, and it's been a long journey, but I felt like, okay, that's all behind me now. I've moved on, you know, got remarried, have a new daughter, life is good. And then that whole Ben Affleck on Sam Harris thing happened. Mm-hmm. You guys remember that episode?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then that sort of prompted me to start speaking up, because I realized that, okay, this conversation is now in the mainstream, except people don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
So I need to add to this discussion, because obviously what Sam Harris was saying was completely spot on. There was nothing at all about what he said was in the least what's the word I'm looking for? It wasn't offensive in any way.
Yeah.
But Ben Affleck took such offense to it. And so I felt like it was totally unfair. And I thought that, you know, he was calling him gross and racist and all that stuff, really just because Sam Harris was a white man sitting in front of him. But if those words were coming out of a different identity person, he wouldn't be so adverse to listening.
Right.
So I think that what Ben Affleck's problem wasn't even the words that were coming out of Bill and Sam's mouths. It was just the fact that he felt that they didn't have the right to be speaking this objective truth, which is absolute garbage, right? Like, I completely disagree with that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's identity politics, right?
That's a big reason why, we wanted to have you on the show too. One, because we aren't that well educated on the topic. And two, I mean, you're the most qualified person to be speaking on these issues, because you lived it for decades, you know?
Yeah.
And we are two white guys in America who, you know, we do not have any kind of life experiences the way you do. So we're very uneducated. We have very uneducated opinions on the subject.
Just want to say though, the fact that you didn't grow up Muslim means that you don't have maybe necessarily the personal experiences, but you know, the fact that you're white American men doesn't prevent either of you guys from being able to just objectively look at facts and statistics and clear examples and evidence in front of you and make, statements to make, you know what I mean? Like, you can add your voice to this discussion just like anybody else. And I think that right now, it's not like the world was all like, hey, let's just start talking about this religion that's popular in the Middle East. The religion came onto our soil, and that's why people are now sort of forced into the position of being educated about Islam. And I'm happy to be able to facilitate that, but it makes me even happier when I see that everybody is willing to get in on the discussion, that it's not just for certain people.
I mean, that brings me to one of the many, many questions I'd love to ask, and that is, you know, as far as the Muslim community in the West or in Western countries, what is their take on this ideology that seems to be being pushed by people on the left somewhere, or actually, I guess, on both sides, where people confuse Islam as the religion with a race of some kind, even though it has nothing to do with race. What people who are actually in the Muslim world or formerly from the Muslim world, what is their point of view when they interact with this sort of ideology?
Well, they think it's hilarious. They think that this whole lefty ideology that's happening now, they just think it's a complete joke. The word liberal is like a bad word. And I personally identify as a liberal person, but not, you know, I think the politically liberal or democratic in the States is different than being a liberal human being. Those are two totally different things these days. But, in the Muslim world, because they don't want to conflate the two, they call themselves secular. Mm. And they keep the word liberal for people like, you know, the far lefties that are confused and don't really understand what's going on here. The kind of people that would conflate Islam with a race. They start talking about Muslims as if it's an ethnicity, as if you're just like you're a black woman Muslim.
This is not something.
An immutable characteristic. If that were true, then I'd still be a Muslim today, and I haven't been a Muslim for 15 years.
Right.
And in fact, I never even chose to be a Muslim. It was just slapped on top of my identity. And there are parts of my identity that I can't change and that I don't want to change, but Islam, being a Muslim, was never, it's an ideology. It's a thought. It's like you can be Republican and then decide you're going to be Democrat and then decide you're going to be communist if you want, you know, like none of that changes your identity. That just changes your ideology. You're changing your mind.
Yeah. Now that brings me to another question I have. So you're saying that a lot of people in the Muslim people in the West, they kind of laugh at the liberal parties.
Oh, no, sorry. Muslim people in the West. I thought you said Muslim people in the Muslim world. Muslim people in the West, they have a different reaction.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because in Europe and I guess in Canada as well, it seems like politicians try to be politically correct in order to get, maybe for political reasons, to get votes, not only of people who are liberal, but is it also for getting votes? Are they kind of pandering to votes of the Muslim community or are those people not really,
definitely.
Or are those people, communities not really voting? Or do they not really care about their the political view of people on the far left? Or is that not correct at all?
Oh no, you're right. Like your typical example here in the States would be like Linda Sarsour buddying up with Bernie Sanders, which is absolutely insane to me. Like you've got a conservative Muslim with the most progressive American. Like they're polar opposite value systems. But from Linda Sarsour's point of view, the Democrats are more likely to pander to her and her community than Republicans are. So of course, she's going to try and encourage her people to vote for him. And from Bernie's point of view, he's like, well, yeah, there's this huge demographic, because it was in Michigan, I think, where there's like a lot of Muslims there. And he wanted the Michigan vote. And so he decided to pander to her. So it's just them putting politics ahead of their real values, really, because Linda Sarsour, who openly praises Sharia law, obviously is not at all behind Bernie's progressive values, right? Sharia law is the most conservative right-wing set of laws you could possibly imagine.
So why do you think that the Muslim community never teamed up with, say, like the hard right, like the kind of religious hard right that was happening a few years ago, where people were bringing a lot of religious ideas, conservative Christian ideas, into politics, that in some cases lined up with Muslim beliefs, so maybe like anti-gay stuff and that sort of thing. Why did that alliance never take place?
Like the 90s conservative Christian,
kind
of 80s, 90s, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know some Muslims that do. I can't remember her name right now, but she's the one who was famously wearing, the first one to wear the American flag hijab on television. She was a Republican, and she was trying to convince Muslims that, hey, look, our values align with these conservatives over here. But at the end of the day, white conservative Americans are the bad guy, right? Mm. And all minority groups are the ones that are going to get pandered to. So if you're a Muslim in America, you're looking at the situation going, do I want to be with these guys on the right that everybody hates? Or do I want to be with these guys on the left and everybody will pander to me? And all I have to do is put a scarf on my head and Hillary Clinton's going to tweet about me. So it was kind of a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting because I think you guys know this already, but I'm going to say it for your listeners in case somebody doesn't know, that there was a Muslim woman in the Olympics that was not wearing a hijab, and she won actually gold. I think she was a runner.
Yeah.
And there was another Muslim woman who was wearing a hijab. She didn't win anything. And that's the one that Hillary Clinton tweeted about. So it's pretty obvious that it's not about the individual or what she has accomplished, but really just the fact that she has a scarf on her head. Mm-hmm. So it's
which she might not even want to be wearing. Is that my right?
She may or may not want to be wearing. It doesn't even matter. I mean, I'll tell you guys another story, but we were just hanging out with some ex-Muslims here. And there was this one girl from Somalia. Her mom was trying to convince her to start wearing a hijab. And she's like, I don't want to, mom. And this girl's starting to become a police officer. Like, she's going to school for it. And her mom says to her, I bet you if you wore the scarf, you would get hired in a heartbeat. And she was like, yeah, I know I would, mom. And then we all started laughing because I said, well, look at you. You're black and you'd have a scarf on your head. And then this other guy was like, you know, they totally put you on their website.
Yeah.
Like, she would be the poster. If only she were gay, it would be the perfect trifecta. Right?
Oh, boy.
Just checking off every box.
Yeah.
You know? And I want to stay on this topic of the political left throughout the West. It's not just in America and Canada. It's in Europe too. I mean, you see people like Jeremy Corbyn in the UK doing the same Bernie Sanders routine. But I mean, even more extreme. Jeremy Corbyn is pretty much a terrorist sympathizer at this point.
Yep.
But the political left's evil alliance with radical Islam is just the most mind blowing thing to me. I mean, it's just like you said, Linda Sarsour. Which is that her real name, by the way?
I know her name is Linda Cockroach.
Linda Cockroach.
But if it's not her real name, who would pick Cockroach?
Yeah, I know she actually has a... Yeah, that's right. You could have chosen anything you wanted, but with Cockroach?
Like, Americans don't know Arabic. Like, just pick a different word. Like, they'll believe it, you know?
Lord.
Yeah, no, she actually has a tweet where she was like, you know, wanting to put an end to this. And she's like, yes, my last name means cockroach and I'm proud of it.
Oh, what a bitch.
So that was pretty sad. My favorite was the tweet in response to her, which got the most likes, where some guy said, well, you may be proud of it, but the cockroaches are pretty embarrassed.
So Linda Cockroach, it makes absolutely no sense. And she does the women's march things across the country. And her whole thing is that women are oppressed in America.
Yeah.
And then she advocates for Sharia law.
Yeah, because you know, that's not oppressive to women.
It's like, I just don't understand how, like, and, you know, obviously, like you said earlier, you know, Bernie Sanders has aligned himself with her, you know, to pander to that community and stuff. That anybody takes her seriously or anybody doesn't see through this bullshit is mind-blowing.
She's literally saying freedom is oppressive.
Linda Sarsour is widely embraced by the left. I mean, it's incredible. I you know, I guess I'm talking in circles here, but it makes no sense.
I think it's just ignorance, really. It's just pure ignorance. They think that to be Muslim is a culture, or to be Muslim is a race or an ethnicity or something. They're not understanding that it's equated with being a, like, she is equal to a conservative Christian or a conservative Jew. I mean, I'm talking like a conservative, like what kinds of, how conservative do you have to be as a Christian or as a Jewish person in order for your clothing to identify who you are? Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to be like an Orthodox Jew, or you have to be like a Mormon or Amish or something like that. That's how far right she is with Muslims as well. Like, most American Muslim women don't wear hijab.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she's like far right, but the guys on the left, like the people that are supporting her, like, they're not understanding that that's where she belongs, and she's playing that, right? Mm-hmm. She loves it. It's like, great, we'll just fool these idiots because they're acting like fools. So she's just going to get what she wants out of them. I mean, she pretends to be black now too. Like, she,
she's just a white girl from New York. Like, I don't understand. She calls herself a person of color. What color? I mean, like,
I don't understand.
Yeah, she'll just say and do whatever it takes. And everybody is just willing to pander to her because the new black these days is to pander to minority groups. And that in and of itself is extremely racist. It's extremely bigoted to do that. I mean, even this term, people of color, that they've come up with, it's like, how is that POC. Any different than saying colored people?
Right.
Right? Like, let's just stop right there and see what you're doing. You're being divisive. You're saying white people and then everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's garbage. Like, can we not just treat all human beings the same? Isn't this what liberals are supposed to stand for? Aren't you supposed to, you know, what happened to judging somebody by their character and not the color of their skin? All of a sudden that's thrown out in the garbage and they've just flipped it around completely. Mm.
Yeah, I think the underlying thing is, you know, this neo-Marxist kind of movement across the West, where, you know, people who hate Western culture in general are willing to align themselves with other people who hate Western culture, even if those people are literally terrorists or terrorist sympathizers like Linda Sarsour, which is pretty remarkable, you know. Yeah, did you think that's kind of the overarching thing going on here, Yasmin, or am I off base?
No, I've heard that theory before, and it, I mean, I don't know enough about it to give an informed decision, but I will say that everything that I see around me is supporting that. I mean, Jordan Peterson here in Canada is somebody who talks about that quite a bit.
Love Jordan Peterson, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. So he talks about that whole Marxism and postmodernism, and when I first heard him talking about it, I was like, that's just crazy. And then it just seemed like it made sense. You know, it just kept on, I kept on seeing and hearing things that supported that theory of his. So
yeah,
one of the most interesting things for me was seeing that the Pew Research that was done in the States showed that Muslims were more afraid of Islamic extremism, like Muslim Americans were more afraid of Islamic extremism than non-Muslim Americans. And I think that sort of speaks to what to your point, in that a lot of Muslim Americans love Western values. That's why they came here. That's why they left their homes. Yeah. So they want to, they don't want this to be another Pakistan or Saudi Arabia, right? Like, they've escaped from those places. Right. So they'll stand up for Western values and they'll stand up against Islamic extremism. And also, it's not just something that they're reading about in a newspaper. This is probably something that they've experienced. Some family member or neighbor or somebody, like everybody, practically every Muslim has some story of some kind of extremism touching their lives in some way. So it's a genuine fear. But the average American is sort of placated into not realizing that it's a genuine fear because of a lot of media that's more focused on worrying about Islamophobia versus worrying about the actual threat of Islamic extremism, which is...
Yeah, I mean, my family are missionaries, Christian missionaries, and so I've heard lots of stories about people fleeing Muslim countries and places like Pakistan or Saudi Arabia because of really outrageous oppression based on religious values. And that brings me to another thing I've been thinking about. Is like Turkey is an interesting point right now, and I think it's an important case study. What's going on in Turkey politically right now, because they're literally, the population of Turkey is literally voting away their democracy.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that is something we might see more of? I mean, there's not a lot of Muslim countries that are real true democracies at the moment at all anyways, is there?
No, there aren't any. No. I mean, Tunisia's sort of flirting with it, but they're not quite there yet. Some countries like look like they might be a democracy, but they're actually not. I'm not really sure. Turkey is sort of doing the same thing that Iran did, right? So they are asking for a Islamic government, basically, which is, I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, Turkey went from one extreme to another. So it was under Kemal Atatürk, it was almost, you know, it was completely discouraged to follow Islam. In fact, I think the hijab was, I want to say it was illegal, but I'm not absolutely sure. But I know for a fact that it was, all of these things were frowned upon.
And this was the previous administration?
This is Kemal Atatürk. So this is like 100 years ago.
Okay. See, I'm not familiar.
So, yeah. So they just, they were a secular democracy, and now they're going in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Egypt, for God's sakes, if you look at Egypt in the last 60 or 70 years, I mean, Egypt was kind of on the path to liberalization for a while there. They're almost a European type country for a while, and then they completely, you know, took a hard turn in the wrong direction.
Yeah, so Egypt is another case that just, so the Muslim Brotherhood started in Egypt. So Egyptians are very aware of this whole, like, people like Linda Sarsour, like Islamists, like political people trying to, so basically the split. Okay, so Islam asks Muslims to make sure that every person on the planet follows Allah and his messenger. So basically make sure you have to keep killing until every person on the planet says the Shahada, basically until every person on the planet is a Muslim.
Yeah.
And so that's the aim. That's what the religion compels Muslims to do. So for the Muslims that are going to actually follow these teachings, you've got a split. You've got the jihadis, which are the bin Ladens and the ISIS, Boko Haram, Al Qaeda, all of those groups. And all the people that are ramming their trucks into people, or the nail bombs in a music concert, all of those terrorist type people, those are all jihadis, right? They're going to kill the name of Allah. 9/11, example of that as well. So that's one stream. And then you've got the other stream, which are the Islamists, like the Muslim Brotherhood type people, who are going to use the government against themselves. So they will use secular democracies, and they will try to get Islam into the highest, like, it's going to be much quieter than jihadis. Nobody's going to really be aware of it. Right. There's a term we have in Arabic that's sim fil asal, which means the poison in the honey. So these guys are going to wear nice suits. They're going to be democratically elected. They're going to shake hands with, you know, world leaders. But they have the exact same aim as the jihadis, but they just have a very different way of doing it, a much more suave way of doing it. So jihadis hate Islamists because they feel like they're not doing it the right way. Muhammad didn't go and, you know, be political about it. He just went and chopped off heads. So they're saying, like, this is the pure way that we should do it. We should just be jihadis. And the Islamists, of course, are realizing, okay, well, that's not going to work in this day and age. We have to sort of evolve and figure out how we're going to get back our empire. Mm. So after the Ottoman Empire fell, this is in the 1920s.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Islamic Empire used to be huge, right? It was all even into Europe. And once they lost their, you know, their wonderful golden age of having all of this power, they sat together in Egypt and they figured out, okay, how are we going to do this? We can't win our territory back with the sword like we did the first time. We have to do this in a different way. And that's when they came up with doing it through what is now being called Islamism, or, you know, basically, they took the fascist ideologies and they said, let's just implement that. Let's just do what all these other fascists did. Mm. And that's who Majid Nawaz is always talking about now, who are the Islamists. And they are a concern. Of course, they're a concern because they're trying to get, they are in our governments, in Canada, in the United States, all over Europe, they're succeeding. They had a 100-year plan. Their 100-year plan is online. This isn't a secret.
Yeah.
And if you look at their 100-year plan, you'll be impressed at how well they're doing, actually. Mm. And so they are definitely a concern, but people are more concerned about jihadis these days. People are more concerned about, obviously, the terrorism and people being killed just walking down the street. And so these guys just keep on sliding into the into the positions of
because they have the better
government.
They have the better PR.
That is
look.
Absolutely terrifying. That is,
yeah, it is, and that that's who the OIC is. So they are they're the largest voting bloc in the UN, and there are like 57 Islamic countries, and that's why ridiculous things happen, like Saudi Arabia being the leaders of the Human Rights Committee for Women.
Yes, yeah, I'm so glad you pointed that out.
How is this possible? Well, it's possible because the largest voting bloc are all Muslims. They're all Islamists, and they are all going to do they all have the exact same plan.
That's amazing.
I know we've all, you know, everybody, probably most people listening to have seen that video from, and I forget the man's name. I'm sure you know, Yasmin, the former president of Egypt, mocking the Muslim Brotherhood maybe 60 years ago. I think it was in the 50s.
That's right.
The Muslim Brotherhood saying, oh, we should make all the women wear the hijab. And he's mocking them and saying, well, why don't they wear it? You know, and they're laughing like that was laughable to them, you know, 50 or 60 years ago. It's just incredible what's happened to that country and a lot of Middle Eastern countries since then. It's just,
You're right. It is heartbreaking to see what has happened to Egypt and what has happened to Libya and what's happened to Iraq and what's happened. Actually, now what's happening in Sweden, what's happening in Germany, it's spreading, right? They are doing really well. They've had a lot of experience. People over here tend to really underestimate Muslims and this Islamic, the power that they have because they just, it's so foreign to them. But for people like me who have lived in the Muslim world, who understand how incredibly powerful these countries are, it's a genuine fear. And it's actually surprising to me that people either, I don't know if it's arrogance or if they're just naive with underestimating Muslims, but you know, they should know, like even with somebody like Trump, who is full of hot air going on and on about how much he's going to do, like Muslim ban this and that. And then what's he doing? Sword dancing with them. Yeah. And talking about how wonderful Saudi Arabians are and blah, blah, blah. Like it must make you stop and pause and think, wow, how powerful are these people that they're going to make somebody like Donald Trump, who is so, you know, opposed to these people, all of a sudden be kissing their butts. Like, you know, there's something going on there.
Now, Yasmin, I have kind of a dual question here. I'm really curious when I hear about different parts of the Muslim world and there's different ethnicity groups in different parts of the Muslim world, like say, for example, the Kurds or different tribes in Afghanistan. I obviously the difference between Shiite and Sunni, but first part of my question is how broad really is the spectrum of Islamic belief in the world? I mean, there's over a billion Muslims. So how diverse is it really, like on the spectrum of Islam? Like how militarized is it all across the board? And also, secondly, I've heard you say before that it's not your goal to try to reform Islam. Like that's not your aim in it at all. But do you see in the future, if you're just looking at it from a bird's eye view, do you see potential in Islam having some sort of reformation where it becomes not violent? Or is it just, is violence and kind of like a, or is politics and violence built just so into the religion that it's impossible to separate?
So yes, politics and violence are inherently part of the religion. If you pick up the Quran, open it up to any random page, there's going to be something violent in that verse that you read. So that, beyond a doubt, Islam is more political than it is religious. Like there's if you flip through the Quran, there's little bits of faith stuff here and there, but not a lot. Most of it is about battles and fighting for Allah and jihad and things like that.
See, people don't, a lot of people, especially I feel like in America, don't understand that. They don't know that Islam is a political ideology as much as it is a religion. People just aren't aware of that fact, I think.
You're right. They're not. And it's frustrating to me because you just go to Quran.com and every language on the planet is there. Like just, it doesn't, it's not a lot of, it's just so easy to just listen to what you've been told, but it's really not that difficult these days to go to the source. You don't have to listen to me. You don't have to listen to anybody. Just go and read the Quran yourself. just flip through it, just scroll through it. And I mean, there are only like two or three main themes, right? It's not gonna, it's very repetitive. You know, I think Allah probably, you know, needed an editor because it's just, it's over and over and over again, just talking about killing the non-believers, spreading the message of Islam. And then in the second sentence, he'll be like, and God is merciful and loving and great and whatever. So that's, you know, that's really what it's all about. But when you're asking me about how many Muslims would respond to that or believe in that or whatever, that's really hard for me to say, because like you said, there are over a billion Muslims. But what I can speak to are things that we have statistics for. Mm-hmm. So first of all, there's this like Christianity has like 30,000 different sects, right? Mm. Okay. Islam does not have nearly that many. I mean, some people, I don't even know where they would come up with this, but some people have said that there's like over 70 sects. Sure. Let's say there are. The point of the matter here is, though, that over 90% of them, or close to 90% of them, are Sunni Muslim, which are the kind of Muslim that I was. So when we talk about Islam and when we talk about Muslims, we're talking about the vast majority of Muslims. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to just, we're not going to bother with those 10%, which within those 10%, remaining 10%, there's like 69 to 70 sects. So you can just imagine what a tiny little minority each one of those little groups is. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to put those to the side for a minute. Some of those groups are pacifist. Some of those groups are, you know, are not, I'm not concerned about them at all. Reformers are in that group too. I'm not concerned about them because, you know what, they believe in secular liberal values. And so I'm not worried about them. They can sit over there for a minute. But I'm worried about these other 90% over here. They're the ones that when you look at Pew Research, you will see that they will answer very honestly when you ask them, do you think that Sharia is the law of the land or should be the law of the land? And the responses are overwhelmingly yes.
What would you say is the percentage for Muslims that support Sharia law?
Well, statistically, it was like over 90%.
Oh, wow. My God.
And is that specific countries or is that just kind of a gap?
Over lots of different countries.
Wow.
I mean, at least from where I'm sitting, you know, someone who, you know, I've never been a Muslim and I have a few Muslim friends, but not very many. And I've never lived overseas. It seems to me that Sharia law is the line between a moderate Muslim and a radical Muslim. Sharia is that line, right? I mean, it's a ridiculous ideology that basically says you should not, let's say if you're an American, for instance, if you believe Sharia law, it should be the law of the land, you're rejecting the Constitution of the United States. So that's kind of a non sequitur there. You know, so that's kind of the line for me.
Numbers in the United States are less. They're more like 60% or something like that. So there's not as high as they are in the...
60% is pretty high.
Yeah.
It's very high. That is alarmingly high.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, too, which I need to sort of explain at this point is, so Muslims are individuals, they're human beings that have just been brainwashed with this ideology. So a lot of times when you ask them, do you think that people should be stoned to death if they have sex outside of marriage? They will say to you, yes. Do you think that somebody should be killed if they leave the religion of Islam? They will say to you, yes, because that's what they have been raised and trained and taught to say. Mm-hmm. They almost are compelled to say that they want Sharia to be the law of the land, because to say otherwise is to deny the laws of Islam, is to say you do not want to live under Allah's rule, which would make you basically... halal, like that you would go to hell for that. So they're not like sitting there and actually thinking about it and making a decision like, Sharia would require that all homosexuals be killed, for example. So, you know, I'm not sure if I want to agree to that. They're not thinking it through. They're just like, it's more like this is what they've been, this is how they've been educated. This is the way the school system runs, the community, the media, the everything in their life is all singing this same tune. And so they're just like being swept up into it like a school of fish. They're not actually thinking about these things. It's pretty shocking for me to look back and realize the kinds of quote-unquote beliefs I had. And I say quote-unquote because I don't know. They weren't really beliefs because I never actually believed them. I just accepted them.
Right.
I just was like, well, this is how it has to be. You swallow the Quran whole. Like you have to, if you don't, you're going to burn in hell. So it's more fear-based than anything else.
Yeah. I think a lot of people in Western countries who didn't have a lot of exposure to super conservative religious backgrounds growing up don't realize how in really conservative religious spheres, how easy it is to like smooth over paradoxes. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you know, if you're gay, you need to be stoned to death. But it's a mercy. And that's why, you know, it's a mercy to stone them to death because then their suffering won't be as much, you know, it's a religion of peace because once everyone who's not Muslim is dead, there will be peace in the world. You know what I mean? Like, and
you got it. Yeah.
And this, this happens. Basically, it's a cultic kind of mentality.
Totally agree.
And that's what happens when you have a completely closed-in culture that doesn't allow for discourse or questioning. Or, you know, like, I guess in Egypt, they blow up any... They try to, like, destroy archaeological finds that might disprove something in the Quran, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, and Afghanistan, they do that. Iraq, they do that. Syria, they do that. All over the Muslim world, all of the cultures that existed before where Islam came there, they would get rid of them. And if they didn't have the firepower to do it at the time, then that's what's happening now with ISIS. And they're coming up and they're finishing the work. In Egypt, we would have lost everything. We would have lost the Sphinx and the pyramids and all, had the Brits not stepped in and prevented the destruction of all these things.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine those things, you know, getting destroyed?
I mean, that's why they're all in museums in Britain, right? Because they were all swept up and shipped away from the people that were trying to destroy it all.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Well, we don't want to keep you. We don't want to keep you for too much longer. I know we've already kept you longer than we said we would. But so when's the book coming out?
You know what? It's going to be announcing something pretty soon. I can't definitive date, but I'm going to be going to Australia in March with Majid Nawaz and Ali Rizvi to promote the movie Islam and the Future of Tolerance, which is directed by Jay Sh- and he's made the movie based on the book that Sam Harris and Majid Nawaz wrote together of the same name, Islam and the Future of Tolerance. So we're going to go around, we're going to do a movie tour. And so I really want to make sure that I have the books for me then, because after every talk, we'll have like a book signing.
We're so sorry, guys. Yasmin's stream went out after this, so you wouldn't really be able to understand what she was saying. She was about to plug her book, which is coming out very, very soon, and I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to read it. It's called From Al-Qaeda to Atheism. It's going to be really interesting, really good. That'll be coming out soon. You can find Yasmin on Twitter by searching Yasmin Muhammad or searching Confessions of an Ex-Muslim. You can find her website, confessionsofanexmuslim.com, and definitely check out her podcast, The Secular Jihadist from the Middle East. It's a really good podcast. It's her and three other ex-Muslims from the Middle East, and they all have real life experience on this topic. It's a really, really great podcast. Definitely check it out. Definitely well worth subscribing to them on iTunes. Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, nothing beats firsthand experience and a real life experience. It's pretty cool. Really stoked to have her on, man. We were supposed to have her on before, but dang hurricanes, man. Irma is clearly an Islamophobe.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think Islamophobia is like a fake word made up by the Muslim Brotherhood like 20 years ago. But Irma, definitely big Islamophobe. But yeah, it was great having Yasmin on. We've been trying to get her on forever. We persevered through some technical difficulties. Her audio cut out there at the end, and we're really sorry about that. Won't happen again. Might happen again. Hey, man. I can't make, I'm not making any promises I can't keep. But you guys, check her out on Twitter. Check out her podcast.
Until government opens up free market on internet a little bit more, stops all this monopoly shit. I mean, Comcast and AT&T, you know, and we can get some actual decent internet in the country that's supposed to be leading the Western world. That'd be great.
Sounds like a great topic for the next episode of the No Gimmicks podcast coming out next week. We love you guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, no gimmicks. No gimmicks.